Hello and welcome to this PSG Think Big series podcast. In this program, Alicia Seckham speaks to Michelle Phillips, the CEO of Transnet, on ports to pipelines and the future of the entity.
Hello and welcome to the Think Big series brought to you by PSG. I'm Alicia Seckham. Well, South Africa's cash-strapped logistics company Transnet has been described as both too big to manage and too big to fail. And so today we're discussing what it's going to take to turn the state-owned enterprise around. Over the past year, wide-ranging reforms have been in play, and a big part of the equation is now bringing private partners on board to help bolster its ailing rail and port services that have hamstrung the country's exports, undermining the recovery and growth of the South African economy. At the helm of the overhaul is current CEO Michelle Phillips, and she joins us now to talk us through the recovery plan, freight logistics roadmap in hand. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to have you with us. And I'm going to launch straight into the kind of conversations that have been happening around Transnet, because they seem to have turned more positive than they've been in a very long time. So much so that we're hearing things like South Africa's been pulled from the brink of a logistical blackout. Bottom line, have we avoided another Eskom scenario?
So good morning, Alicia, and good morning to your viewers. You're correct. Transnet is very big, and correctly so. She's also too big to fail. I'm not so sure about too big to manage, because certainly with this new leadership team and the board, organized labor, our customers, we've really rallied together to ensure that this organization does not fail, and she will not fail. So we've been working since October 2023 on this recovery plan that you've mentioned. It's an 18-month recovery plan. We've completed the first 6 months of that recovery plan, and we've seen the stabilization and, in fact, some turnaround in our operations, in our financials. We've seen the positive impact of the kind of work that we've been doing. We are now into the first 6 months of, let's call it, the second phase, which should take us through to the end of the 24-25 financial year. Certainly things are looking positive. There's still a lot of work to do. You recall that, as you've mentioned, we have the Freight Logistics Roadmap, which seeks to ensure that there's a reform in the logistics space. But then together with that, we have a recovery plan. So we have to deal with the bread and butter issues, making sure that we are sustainable and that we survive. But at the same time, we have to deal with the transformation of the industry, bringing in the private sector, crowding them in, and seeing how best we take the freight logistics environment forward, right? So we've got a transformation leg together with a recovery leg. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy space to be in. There is a lot of work to be done. We are by no means out of the woods, but certainly we are beginning to see some green shoots. We are beginning to see the improvement across the board in our business, both operationally as well as financially.
We'll be homing in on the detail of the progress that you are seeing in just a bit. Before we do, you've recently officially taken over the reins as CEO, right? But you've spent 24 years within the organization, Michelle, having been involved in the business and its operations, especially in the port environment. So with that insider perspective, how did we get to this point, and why did things have to go so far back before getting to this point of realization and requisite action?
So it's an interesting one. People always ask me, how did we get here, right? And there are many reasons as to how we have gotten here. Lack of maintaining infrastructure, failure to invest or underinvestment in necessary infrastructure, possibly also a failure to focus on what it is that generates revenue for Transnet, what it is that actually enables the growth of the economy of the country. And that's a focus on operations and the efficiency of the operations, right? Possibly also a lack of having your customers close to you, not being as transparent and open with your customers, thereby creating some kind of a trust deficit with your customers. You cannot do that because ultimately it's the customer who pays the salary at the end of the day, right? We only make money when we move commodity. So all of our interventions has to be directed towards continued operations and improvement in performance. We have to consistently be reinventing and looking at new and better ways to do things, right? And the best way to do that is to bring the customers close, because the customers also knows this business very, very well, right? So we've had to really get to the bottom of our engagements with labor, because employees do the work. Customers, because they need to support us when we need their assistance on certain things. Funding we've had to deal with. But we've had to reestablish the focus on operations and improvement in operations. And then we've also had to reestablish that focus on the customer. Coupled to that, the tools of trade that people need. If you're not investing in equipment, people can't operate, because they need, we are very, very capital intensive, equipment heavy organization. You know, we talk about the cranes in the ports, we talk about the trains, longstanding locomotives. We've had to work to get those things back, because our people cannot operate if they don't have the required tools of trade, which is why, as we move forward, we've had to go into the purchasing of necessary equipment that is required for people in the ports to be able to do their work. And you will see the delivery of that equipment coming through over the next few weeks, months, and next year. On the rail side, we've had to focus on the availability of locomotives, figure out other ways. We've had to deal with the theft and security vandalism issues. Those are the things that have made it very difficult for Transnet to be, what it is supposed to be. But at the same time, for me, it's focus on what we are good at. Transnet has for many years been doing or trying to be everything to everyone, much to its own detriment. The time is now for Transnet to be very clear about what is it that we are good at. Let's focus on that and let's be better at that. Because ultimately, that is what is going to be earning the revenue, to be generating the revenue, not only for Transnet, but for our customers, and in turn, grow the economy as a whole. Right. And then at the same time, ensure that we create jobs, which are so sorely needed in the country.
Fair to say that you've been forced to get to this point of clarity, though, right? Because government bailouts are now a thing of the past, and there are now stricter conditionalities attached to funds that are being given, leaving you no choice but to do things differently.
Absolutely. I have to say the following. For many years in Transnet, you indicated I've been here. This is my 25th year in Transnet. Going through Transnet over the years, we were very clear about never going to government for any bailout. So all of the work that we've done over the years in Transnet has been to ensure that we are never a drain on the fiscus. So if you go back, you'll find that government has not at any point given Transnet a bailout. There were very specific instances, I think, after the floods, where government gave us, I think it was a 2.9 billion to assist with the flood damages. And then there was another 2.9 billion to assist with getting the longstanding locomotives out. But certainly over the 25 years that I've been in Transnet, our goal was, don't ever go to government, because we did not want to be a drain on the fiscus. The fact that we've now had to go in the last year to government because things had gotten so bad because of the cost of the borrowings and the debt, that we've had to go to government, that's the responsible thing to do when your business is in trouble. And we did go to government, and you note that government again refused to provide us with any bailout. What they did is they provided us with a 47 billion rand guarantee, which allowed us to go and borrow more money, right? So we are still not out of the debt, or let's call it the debt trap that we find ourselves in. What we've been trying to do over this recent past, since we've implemented our recovery plan, we are also busy with financial modeling, together with government assisting us, together with an optimization exercise of the balance sheet, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that we've been doing. And we have to do those things because we cannot afford the cost of the borrowings at the moment. A lot of our debt, we are trying to renegotiate and get into longer term debt that is cheaper, you know, so that we don't have this constant obligation to redeem. So there's a lot of work going on the financial side, like I said, on the operation side, because we need to earn revenue, etc. So, I mean, those are the kind of things that we're working with.
Okay, so Michelle, let's take stock. A year ago, as you say, the National Logistics Crisis Committee was formed. We're seeing now this renewed commitment from government and business to work together to get things back on track. We now have a roadmap for reform in hand, and that's triggering a fundamental shift in the way the sector is structured, right? Let's get specific. What progress has been made in implementing institutional reforms in line with the freight logistics roadmap?
Okay. So the freight logistics roadmap, you recall, was approved in cabinet in December 2023. Mm-hmm. In that freight logistics roadmap, there are very specific things that is expected from Transnet going forward. Some of those were included as part of the government guarantee conditions that I've just mentioned, the 47 billion rand government guarantee. So we've been hard at work trying to make sure that we comply with those guarantee conditions. Okay. So firstly, corporatization of the TNPA. I'm going to mention a few. The corporatization of the TNPA is expected to be in place by April of 25. Okay. We have been working very hard to ensure that all of the steps related to corporatization is in place in meeting our government guarantee conditions. Firstly, let me say we are fully compliant with the government guarantee conditions. Now, so corporatization of TNPA is proceeding and we will endeavor to meet that deadline. Then we have the separation of TFR into infrastructure manager and freight rail operations, right? So we are very, very busy with that exercise. That's probably taken up most of our time over the last few months. You'll note that we've published the network statement on time. We've published a proposed tariff methodology on time. The interim regulator has been able to hold the public consultation sessions timeously. We are now in the process of commenting on some of those that have come through from the public. We're very pleased with the level of interaction and the kind of ideas that have come through from, you know, other stakeholders within the industry. We are hoping, and in fact, we believe that the final network statement will also be published timely. That would then allow access or applications for access to the network to probably start around about September, October of this year. Okay. Now, firstly, there's another requirement in the government guarantee conditions that we are working on. We are not sure how ready the private sector is to actually get onto the network in this year. Certainly, some of the conversations that I've had with some private operators is that there's a few things that they would require, right? Long-term agreements, they would need to order the equipment, et cetera, and it would take them some time. We have quite a substantial, what we call B fleet. So we agreed with government as well that we would establish a rolling stock leasing company together with a partner, because we need a partner who is able to bring in capital to enable the refurbishment of some of these wagons and locomotives. Once we've done that, we would be able to offer that to the market for use on the network. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of that. We need to go to market. We've tried to go to market. There were some compliance issues. We now have to return to market, and we're trying to push to do that as soon as possible. That will then allow us to offer that kind of equipment to the private sector as well for use on the network. Then we have some other private sector participation transactions that we need to go to market with. We've completed the pre-feasibilities. For example, the Nuha Manganese Export Terminal in the Eastern Cape. We've completed those first feasibilities. We're busy with the feasibility studies. We now have to go to market so that we can find a partner who can help us build that facility, because we have to decommission the current PE facility and then build a new facility, 12 to 16 million tons facility for manganese. Then on the Richards Bay side, the idea is to go to market there as well with the Richards Bay Bulk Terminal to find a partner to help us with the modernization of that facility. And there are a few others that may not be part of the government guarantee conditions, but certainly that we are working on. For example, we've got branch lines that we could possibly either lease or concession to the private sector. You know, we subsidize a lot of these lines, and we cannot continue to do that. We need to focus on really the high yielding parts of the network. So if the private sector can become involved and, you know, invest and modernize and you know, assist with those parts of the network being able to do what they are expected to do for the economy, then I mean that will assist us going forward. Also, we've got quite a huge portfolio of non-core properties that we, part of them we will be disposed of, we will be disposing of completely. Then we have a portfolio as well of properties that we could enter into with the private sector for development purposes. So kind of development leases that we could move forward. I think we have about 30 odd of those. And we've got over 3,700 non-core properties that require disposal. A lot of them is residential. You know, there may have been a place for them at a time many years ago when we were providing these kind of railway houses for our staff. That's no longer necessarily necessary, but some of them, you know, obviously we're offering to our staff also to purchase it, but there are other properties that would need to go to the market that, you know, we just do not have a use for. And then there are some other stuff that we are also doing. So it's quite a bit.
Yeah, quite a bit and lots of work, you know, that has to go into this. While you do, what's your sense of the appetite from private sector to start getting more so involved, Michelle? Because like you alluded to, you know, it's one thing talking about doors being opened for private entities to operate within the national network and the opening of train slots for third-party train operator access. But for private sector, latent stocks on the network are only lucrative if they're operationally productive, right? So, I mean, what kind of appetite are you getting at this point in terms of willingness to engage and willingness to invest, plow capital into Transnet?
So it's been, I can say, quite overwhelming, right? Quite overwhelming. The challenge is that we have processes because we are a state-owned company. So we've had proposals from companies unsolicited, a number of them, completely unsolicited, but because people know what we are busy with, they're wanting to get in there as soon as possible. We've had quite a number of private companies come to us and say, listen, we have the necessary funding. How can we deal with this thing? You know, how can we help you improve your operations? We can invest in equipment. There are companies who have said to us, we don't necessarily need equity in your business. All we want to do is come in and work with you to improve the performance because, you know, if the performance is there and if we are, if we can run this network without interruption, whether it be on the security side, we can help on the signaling side, you know, just getting the network up to a required standard. We've had a number of customers come to us and say, these, not just customers, but private sector entities come to us and say, these are the things that we can do. Now, the challenge is when you have so much interest, it makes it very difficult for you to approve any particular bid. You have to go to market. Sometimes these stakeholders don't understand that those are the processes that we have to follow because of the overwhelming interest in becoming involved in our business. So we're very mindful. We want to avoid issues where we, again, are challenged because we've awarded to party X and not party Y, because party X has spoken to us and not party Y. We don't want to get involved in those. A number of our transactions, you'll note, has already been challenged. We had the security one, the court found in our favor. We had the now with DCTP2, we have the one bidder challenging the award to the other bidder. So we're very careful. We have to take the lessons that we've learned and we go to market and we have to allow proper evaluation of the bids that are submitted. We have to allow proper adjudication so that we don't have challenges once we award. And that's really the process that we feel is best for us to follow. It's very difficult because people don't often understand when you say to them, it cannot be done in this particular way because this is what the process calls for. Unfortunately or fortunately, this is how state-owned enterprises work. We've been managed by the Public Finance Management Act. We're very clear about the procurement rules. President has now recently also signed the PPA into existence. So we're very mindful of the rules that we need to follow, and we'd rather follow the rules than be challenged, and then the challenged keeps us away from doing what we need to do. When you ask about the response from, I can tell you every other day I receive a proposal. Every other day.
That being said, Michelle, I mean, what level of flexibility are you coming into this entire equation with? Because, you know, it is going to require a new approach, and private investors are going to need to be assured that any access that they are given, you know, to rail, for example, is going to be long enough to warrant making long-lived asset investments so that, you know, the ROI makes sense from their side as well. And I guess what I'm getting to is, do you see the shift from a centralized control SOE developmental state into a liberalized market driven investment-led model a hard one to assimilate to?
I don't think it's a hard one to assimilate to. It's a necessary one. However, when you do these things, you need quality in the delivery of these interventions. Because if you don't do it and you don't do it right, you don't do it in the right way, you are going to have problems anyway. Now, private sector, we agree that the period needs to be long enough for them to get a return. We also agree that, we are not going to determine the access fee. There was a lot of noise about these charges that we put out. We had to put a number. We did our work. And those are the numbers that we've come out. Whether the regulator is going to give that number, we don't know. I doubt it. The regulator is going to give a number that the economy can bear. Okay? That's their work. Because otherwise, all of this is for nothing. So it needs to be something that the economy can bear. Everything that we do is to ensure that we move with speed, but that we do it in the right way, without challenges and without people questioning who we've awarded to and why we've awarded to X, Y, and Z. So we have to be very careful. And that's the only thing for me that is important, is that the governance must be complied with. Now, government has assisted us on some of the procurement side of the National Logistics Crisis Committee, where we've been able to short circuit a number of things, a number of departures have been provided to us. But even with those departures, it does not mean that process must not be followed, right? Yeah. So we've been given a little bit of flexibility, but not to the extent that we can willy-nilly just go and give contracts to people or you know, bring in ex-partners. We have to follow the processes, and we have to be able to explain why a certain party and not another party.
Absolutely. And like you say, it needs to happen, especially where the idea of rail reform has already taken root regionally, right? Seeing South Africa lose competitive advantage. How are you planning to reclaim the business lost to other regions, the port of Maputo, for example, but also reclaim transport being done by road transport operators who've made big investments into their own capacity?
So, look, one thing I'm clear of, and I think everybody needs to understand, is that firstly, losing cargo to Maputo, we understand why that happened, right? At the same time, we do not have a demand problem. There's no demand problem. What we need to figure out is how best do we get the cargo on rail. So how are you going to get the cargo on rail? You need to provide the necessary equipment. You need the locomotives, you need the wagons, you need your network in the state that it should be. You need to ensure that as a country, by the way, not as Transnet, but as a country, we have a very big role to play as Transnet, but as a country, that we do something about the theft and the vandalism of our network on all infrastructure. It's the problem that Eskom is facing. It's a problem that PRASA is facing. It's a problem that Transnet is facing. We just do not have sufficient resources in the country for whatever reason, to be able to protect this network. So we are spending a lot of money on security and on innovative ways to protect the network. Mm-hmm. It's a no-brainer because when we protect the network, everybody wins, right? Now, Maputo is there, Namibia is there. Our customers prefer to not have a single port strategy because then they are able to mitigate their risk themselves, right? We've been operating for years between Maputo and South Africa. We move cargo to Maputo via rail, right? We move cargo from Maputo into South Africa via rail. We've been having those relationships for many years. Now, what is important is the question you ask about reclaiming. Right now, when we go to the demand, we are struggling to move commodity that's already signed to us. We need to fix all of the things that I've mentioned and which we are busy doing, right? Which we are busy doing. And in that way, we can actually move the commodities that the customers have already promised to us out of the country. So you'll see that a lot of work that we are doing now is we've signed for a step in OEM to be able to bring us some of the longstanding locomotives out. We're beginning to build new locomotives out of Durban together with our OEMs. We've entered into OEM, long-term OEM agreements, both for ports and rail. In the ports, we've already seen equipment being delivered. We will see equipment being delivered over the next probably 18 months. That will come in so that we can continue, you know, improving in our performance. And those are the things that will get confidence back with our customers. And those are the things that, you know, I don't know if it's a question of reclaiming and bringing cargo back into the country. I think for now, it's focus on what we can do. There is enough to go around, by the way, but we need to get to the numbers that we've promised our customers. So for the next 12 months, you recall the first 6 months, the target was 154. We ended up 2 million tons below the 154. The target now for this next 12 months is very ambitious. It's a 170 million ton target. We are still 2 million tons behind, and we are pushing our people to recover the 2 million tons and exceed the 170 million ton number. And
what kind of capital commitment, Michelle, are we looking at that needs to now back that up from your end?
So remember, in December, when we received the 47 billion rand guarantee, right? That 47 billion, if I recall correctly, it was a 22 billion in the first year and about a 25 billion in the second year, right? So for this year, the focus is, I think it's around about 27 billion now, because obviously we didn't spend the full amount in the previous year. So this year, we've got about a 27 billion rand to focus on whatever is required for this recovery plan to be realized. So there's a number of initiatives. When I talk about the equipment in the ports that have been purchased and on order, the kind of things that TFR is doing to ensure that the network is up to standard, some of the maintenance work we have to do there, the work on signaling, making sure that the trains are able to run, all the work for the long-standing locomotives. Those are the kind of things that we're focusing on. That does not mean that we don't need more money. you know, we it's a huge debt burden. We have to pay that debt. We do require more funding, and that is why we've been engaging with our funders as well, right? Yeah. For cheaper long-term funding.
Michelle, you highlight this, you know, the need for more money and the fact that you've still got debt on your balance sheet. How much of a noose around your neck is that debt that still sits on your balance sheet? And I ask the question because some have suggested that the only way to move sustainably forward from this point is to have that debt ring-fenced, you know, state capture debt in particular, because leadership, no matter how strong, will be hamstrung. And like it or not, government is going to have to step in with some kind of bailout if we're going to see any of the plans you've outlined garner any real sort of traction. Do you agree?
I agree that it is a huge challenge for us. It's not one that we can come out of on our own. And allowing us to borrow more money is not, I don't believe, is the best solution. That being said, You know, I'm very mindful about what it is that government can and cannot do. Okay. So we make applications. Government will make their decisions. We will continue, I mean, as is our duty, in fact, because we, you know, my fiduciary duty is to do whatever I have to do to ensure that every action that I take is in the best interest of this organization and the government. So, because I'm a government-owned entity, right? So I have a fiduciary duty to discharge, to do what is in the best interest of government, of the shareholder, as well as Transnet, and so does the board. Now, we, our finance costs, I mean, interest is upwards of 1 billion rand a month. It's very, very difficult to run a business like that. You essentially, I mean, I make the example with my people, saying I'm paying my bond with my credit card. You know, nobody wants to be in that space. So we'll continue to engage government because that's what you do. You go to the shareholder. We'll continue to engage them and hope that we don't upset them too much, but continue to indicate to them, you know, these are the things that we are going through. I mean, there's nothing that is hidden. We've been so open with everybody about the state of Transnet. It's a public asset. You can't keep things hidden. So we have to be completely open about the state of Transnet. At the same time, we understand the pressure on government. What we continue to do is to engage our funders so that we can, you know, at least have breathing space as we move forward. So we hope that, you know, things...
Michelle, I chatted to your chairman earlier this year, Andile Sankmu, and he said, you know, March 2025, Transnet would have stabilized, volumes would be at the right levels, and that Transnet would have hit break even. Is that still an accurate timeline? Have you provided for realistic enough runway here?
So, look, the 170 million ton target that we've forecasted for the end of 24-25. If we achieve those numbers, we should be back in the black by the end of this financial year. Remember, we've got an 18-month recovery plan.
Yeah.
So if we do with speed, all of the things, I'm talking the bread and butter stuff now, recovery plan only. I understand the reform, and the reform is important. And, you know, whatever help we get with the reform, we'll continue to push with that on the side. But when it comes to the recovery of Transnet and getting her turned around from a 5.7 billion loss in the previous year, we are confident that if we continue pushing, if, you know, we're doing various shuts on the different lines, which we do anyway annually, those shuts we expect to work this time because we've got the customers very closely involved with us. And then post that, we would want to see, obviously, the uptick in the volumes. So as I've said, I'm behind as we speak with around about 2 million tons. I need to recover that. So that I can get to the 170 million ton number. Okay. We are above prior year already, but my challenge remains if we fail on the security and the vandalism side, if we have more derailments, which we are trying to avoid because of the state of the network, if we focus on those things and get those things sorted out, you know, if we have less interruptions on the network, we should be in a good position to get those volumes in and to be able to break even. So I'm still confident. I'm the eternal optimist. So it's going to be very tough for me to get away from thinking that, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let's leave it there. Thanks so much, Michelle, for having joined us in conversation today. It's been great catching up with you. Michelle Phillips is the current CEO of Transnet. To our audience, remember, the social media campaign on the series is hashtag ThinkBigPSG. The series is free. It's shareable. It's open to anyone interested, whether you're a PSG client or not. So please do keep the conversation going. Until next time, from me, Alicia Seckham, it's goodbye.